Right. Okay. So we are now on Brachot 5b. And in order to look at that, we're going to look at the text, which I did send you. And you should be able to see it now, hopefully. And there's Nicole. That's very nice seeing you. Oh, I see. RW is Nicole, I think. No. Right. Okay. So, in case this link over here, which I can't press now, but could open in a different way, but that link which you've been sent opens the actual Hebrew edition. And there's also a link to the Davidoff Rambam project, where you can see the Rambam's halachic comments relating to any page of the Talmud. And there are brief English summaries at this point. Now, we begin with Brachot 5b, and this is a sort of a sequence of statements basically concerning prayer and the synagogue. Tanya, we learn in a Braita. So there's a Mishnah and a Braita. There are different recensions of the rabbinic teachings. We're going back 15, 1600 years now to the time of the Talmudic sages. And so Abba Binyamin Omer, so Abba Binyamin, who is one of the sages of the Talmud, he says, Al shnei dvarim hayiti mitzta'er kol yamai. There are two things that I used to be very concerned about all my life. All my life, I was concerned. Mitzta'er means to be in pain, but it means he took pains, as we say in English. I took pains about two things all my life. One was al tfilati shetehe lifnei mitati. One was that my prayer should be lifnei. Now, lifnei means in front of, literally. We're going to discuss this. The Talmud will discuss it. About my prayer, that it should be lifnei mitati, before my bed. Va'al mitati, and about my bed. Shetehe netuna, that it should be placed bein tzafon ledarom, between north and south. Okay, so that is the statement from the earlier sage, Abba Binyamin, and now the Talmud is going to discuss this statement. First of all, al tfilati shetehe lifnei mitati. He's saying that he was always very concerned that his prayer should be before his bed. My lifnei mitati, what does it mean, before my bed? Ilema, if you think it means lifnei mitati mamash, literally before my bed. In other words, there's his bed in the room, this bedroom, and he's standing in front of his bed, and that's where he's praying. If you want to say that's what's meant, v'ha'amar Rav Yehuda, didn't Rav Yehuda Amar Rav say in the name of Rav, in the name of his teacher? Now there's another view, who said it in the name of who? The Itema Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, and others say that it's not a statement from Rav, it's a statement from Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. So what is the statement? Minayin lamitpalel, from where do we know that someone who is praying, that there shouldn't be anything interposing between the person who's praying and the wall, shenema, as it says in the Book of Kings about Chizkiyahu, King Hezekiah, vayasev Chizkiyahu panav el hakir. Chizkiyahu, King Hezekiah, turned his face el hakir. He turned his face to the wall, vayitpalel, and he prayed. So, how can it be that Abba Binyamin is saying that he would always pray just in front of his bed. In other words, sort of praying, and the thing that's right in front of him is his bed. So does that sound right? So the Talmud says, La tema. So don't say that, lifnei mitati, that it means praying in front of my bed. Ela ema, but say it means something else, samuch lemitati. That means close to my bed, not physically, but in terms of time. So there's going to be a bit of a discussion with Rashi, Tosfot, Halacha. What does it mean that one prays close to one's bed? In other words, as soon as one wakes up, gets out of bed, basically washes nagelwasser, ablutions, says brachot, and then one prays without doing anything else. So that's what samuch lemitati means. That means consequent on my bed. Straight after getting out of bed, I pray. So we're going to come to a discussion of that. But before we do this, let's consider the original idea, the idea of praying towards the wall. Now, that one shouldn't pray with something interposing between oneself and the wall. Now, obviously, this is okay if you have one person praying in a room or a very small number of people, then they can all fit along the east wall, as we say in the Mizrach one, the east wall. So that's where the sort of more quote unquote important, the people who are the top of the hierarchy in some sense, their seating in the traditional synagogue is along the east wall. That means the wall with the Aron HaKodesh in it. And so it is considered an honorable thing that they are actually facing the wall. And then behind them, you have the rows of seats. Now, is that okay? What do we say about these rows of seats? Let's look at Tosafot. Sh'lo yehei davar, that nothing should be interposing beino levein hakir, between the person and the wall, aval milta de kviya, but something which is fixed, kagon aron, like a big cupboard, v'teva, and a chest, ein ze hefsek, that is not considered an interruption. Avol mita, but a bed, nireh she'ein ze kavua. It seems, from the point of view of the sages in the Talmud, the bed is not fixed. It's like a light bed. It's like, you know, a camp bed. You can move it around, and so it's not big enough to be considered fixed, because otherwise there wouldn't be any problem praying in front of it. So this idea of praying in front of the wall, that goes as far as the idea that there's the wall, but also if there's a chest, other things, or for example, there's the tables and the lecterns, which are in a synagogue or other things, one is able to pray in front of that. Now, I was doing some research on contemplation in prayer, which is a subject we're going to touch on in a minute as well. And I remember an old rabbi telling me, describing a rabbi of the previous generation, who was actually just at that point only a young man, a 17-year-old, 18-year-old, and he would pray Tzvei Shor. He would pray for 2 hours facing the wall, v'yashtaken, like a stick. He would be standing immobile in front of the wall, deeply immersed in contemplative prayer. So there you have this idea of a person praying in front of the wall. And in a modern synagogue, the hierarchical aspect where the important rabbis, many synagogues only have one rabbi, but there are quite a few synagogues where they have lots of rabbis. And So the important position in many of these synagogues is in the east wall, by the east wall, standing actually facing the wall. And then you have the other people in the synagogue. And if there's a big cupboard, that's no problem, according to Tosafot. Now, so we worked out that it's about getting up. So it's not actually about facing one's bed when one gets up. It is about what it's praying adjacent to the time he would get up from bed. This is the translation they've given of Rabbi Adin Eben Yisrael Steinsaltz. So Rashi says, Samoch lemitati, close to my bed. So what was he saying? What was this rabbi saying? Kol yamai nizhati, all my life I was careful. Shelo la'asot melacha, not to do any work, v'shelo la'asot b'torah, and not to study Torah, k'she'amadati, when I got up, mimitati, from my bed, ad she'ek ha'kriya shema, till I said the shema, ve'et palel, and I prayed. So in other words, he would make sure to pray that saying the Shema and the prayer. Our prayer book gives quite a lot of material before the Shema. There's Psukei de Zimra, the verses of praise, then there's the blessings on the Shema, then the blessing after the Shema, and then the Amidah, that's the prayer. When it says praying here, it means the Amidah. And so Rashi is explaining what Abba Binyamin meant. He would pray straight away after getting up from bed without studying any Torah first. Now, not working is one thing, and also without studying any Torah. Now, Tosafot challenges this. Eila Eima Samuch Lemitati, so he's quoting this, so it means chronologically in time, once I got up. That he wouldn't do any work till he prayed. Now, Tosafot is giving a slightly different perspective. The issue is not working. So then he's quoting Rashi and he's going to disagree with Rashi. Verashi Perash. Now, Rashi explains, Afilu lilmod, even to study Torah. That it's forbidden to study Torah before prayer. And I don't know where he gets this from. Right? That's a striking thing. Tosafot are the generations of students of Rashi. And here they are questioning Rashi. Where does he get this from? This is all the way through the Talmud, incidentally, that the Tosafot very, very often questions Rashi and gives a different interpretation. In fact, aval raya, but there's a proof, deshari lilmod kodem, that it's permitted to study before prayer, diltaman bepeidach sheni, is just a few pages ahead in the second chapter of Brachot. Brachot, page 14b. We're now on page 5b, and so this is 9 pages ahead. Amrinon, we learn there, the Rav, who is one of the great sages of the Amoraim, of the sages of the Talmud, Makdim, he got up early, Umashi Yadein, he would wash his hands. Umavarech, and he would say the basic blessings, like the morning blessings, including the blessings on the Torah. Umatni Pirkei, and he would say Mishnayot. He would study Mishnah, and then Vokari Kriyat Shema, he would say the Shema, Ki Mataz Man Kriyat Shema, when it came to the time for the Shema. In other words, it looks as if he's getting up early when it's still dark. Not yet time to say the morning Shema. He washes his hands, says the basic morning brachot, and then he's learning, he's studying. And when it gets time that he can say the Shema, he says the Shema. So, in other words, Tosafot is saying that it is permitted to study before actual prayer. Now there's a comment by this by the Rebbe in a sicha, in a talk. The Rebbe explains that the halacha is like Tosafot, that one may study Torah before prayer. But why was Rashi strict? Why is it that Rashi says you shouldn't study Torah before prayer? You should pray straight away. Because of his concern that the Torah study should be pure without secondary motives. Why is a person studying Torah? E.g., one of the secondary motives that is mentioned a lot in Hasidic teachings, wanting to be thought of as a clever scholar. Now, this is quite a dilemma in the education system because you want students to study Torah and you want them to study a lot of Torah and to be good at it, good at it. But if a person thinks that the main thing is being thought of as a clever scholar, then he's making the Torah into something secondary. Torah is really a connection with the divine. So therefore, Rashi advised praying first. Now, Rashi didn't think you pray just saying the words. He was advising that you pray first in a spiritual way. And then that might make a person more likely to feel the godliness in the Torah when they study Torah after the prayers. So, in other words, the way the Rebbe is explaining Rashi's concern and why Rashi is more strict than Tosafot is because Rashi wants people that to have a spiritual approach to their Torah study. And the way to ensure a spiritual approach is by praying first. And when one prays first, then that prayer should be in a deeply spiritual mood, and then the person begins studying Talmud, and they have a spiritual approach to the Talmud, and it's a connection between them and the infinite divine rather than something which might suffer from be flawed and marred by personal motives of one's own ego. Now, at the same time, the Chabad approach is to study Hasidic teachings before davening, before prayer, so as to make the prayer more meaningful. Thus, you could say this approach combines the attitude of both Rashi and Tosafot. So you study the Hasidic teachings following Tosafot that you're allowed to study before prayer, but the purpose of the studying is to make the prayer more meaningful. And then, when after the prayer you actually study Torah, then the Torah is more meaningful as well. Okay, so let's pause at this point and let's see if there are any questions or comments from anyone.
Dr. Lowenthal, good evening.
Good evening, Eva.
The way my flat is positioned at the moment is if I face Mizrach for davening, I really don't have any direct access to the wall. So should I just find the closest, like let's say if there's just a table in, I have a bed in between if like I'm facing Mizrach. So should I just find the closest point to the wall or there's not much I can move around? So what's the best solution?
I don't think you have to worry, Eva. The face Mizrah, face towards the temple, and whatever is there in your home. You know, if you're facing a table where you can put the siddur on the table, something like that, I think that's fine.
So what spiritual, sorry, maybe I missed that. I'm pretty tired tonight. Which spiritual teachings then do Chabad learn before prayer?
Well, it could be Tanya, or it could be a Hasidic discourse,
Right.
and either of these could help put a person in a spiritual
In the
mind.
right frame of mind.
Yes. That's any other point? Yes, Cedric.
So, would it be the right thing to do to study prior to any service like weekday Shacharis or Shabbat service?
It would be a very good idea. Thank God in our local Chabad synagogue and in most Chabad synagogues, they have some kind of study session before the Shabbat service or even before the weekday service, so that people are studying something spiritual, putting them in a deeper mood so that when they pray, it's something more meaningful.
So the rabbi perhaps should give the Dvar Torah before the service rather than.
Well, it's not exactly a Dvar Torah. It's more like studying a section of Tanya. For example, there's the way that Tanya is divided up for the days of the year. And so each day there's a little bit to study. And the modern editions of Tanya like give clearly what which date, which bit for which date. Or a Hasidic discourse. Which one can get English translations or summaries. For example, on my website, ChabadResearch.net, there is a section where there are English summaries of discourses. One can sort of find the Seder of the week, and there are probably one or two, sometimes three summaries there that one could read. If one, yes, Roz? You're muted.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Good. As I've mentioned to you in the past, I always thought that before one can start to learn any Torah at all, one must have gone through the brachas of Shacharis. And that if you don't, I mean, I can find the bracha I'm talking about, but I thought it was essential that to prepare oneself and for one's tefillahs to be received by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that one has to have said the appropriate brachas.
Well, the
So
main bracha to say before learning is the bracha, the two brachot on the Torah, which are right near the beginning of the siddur. So you see, at the beginning of the siddur, there's a list of brachot, one after the other.
okay.
And then after all those brachot, such as who gives understanding to the rooster, to crow,
Distinguish between day and night, and
That's right. So
who
then,
opens the eyes of the blind, etc.
yes. So there's that list of brachot, and then
Yeah.
there's the brachot, two blessings on the giving of the Torah, that God gives us the Torah, and then there are a couple of passages of Torah to study straight away. There's the blessing of the priests, and there is a chapter which is actually from the Talmud. These are the things which don't have any limit, and it gives a list of good activities which one is rewarded both in this world and in the world to come. So these are two bits of Torah that we say straight after saying the blessing on the Torah. Once one said these blessings on the Torah, one could then, in theory, then spend time studying Torah.
I'm not clear from your answer which brachas you're referring to. Can you specify them, please?
Well, in your siddur
Yeah.
that you have there,
Yes, I mean, I'm
you've got
literally
the
got a page
list.
from it.
Yeah, you've got, yeah, hold it up. So if you turn to the next page, turn to the next page, please. Right, and if you hold that out. Right, so I think.
Is it not before?
I can't see it clearly enough.
It's pages, it's page, look, it start, everything starts on page five, goes to six and seven.
No, I haven't got a sitter with exactly the same pages as you.
Right.
But the
It's just
way,
the regular Tehillas Hashem.
yeah, but I haven't got that edition with the English translation. It begins off, "Blessed are you, O God, King of the universe, who sanctified us by your commandments, and you've commanded us al divrei Torah, for words of Torah."
Right,
And
that, yeah, that's page 8. You can see it.
then it continues with like another paragraph, and then there's
Yes.
a second blessing, which is actually the one that a man says when he's called up to the Torah. "Blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who chose us from all nations and gave us his Torah."
Yes.
So those are the two blessings on the Torah.
So
And
they must be
that's
said before we learn anything else.
ideally, yes. Yeah.
Right. But it so if one says those, one can then start to study
Yes.
other Torah
Yes.
before one concludes Shacharis.
Yes. Yes, one can.
Thank you. Thank you. I've wondered that for years.
Okay. Any other points from anyone?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And when we're learning Rashi and Tosafos, we're, as my understanding is, we're interpreting, understanding the actual text. So in this case, this was a Mishnah from Rav Binyamin, Binyamin,
Binyamin, the brighter.
Abba Binyamin. So the idea is to understand what Abba Binyamin meant, not necessarily what the halacha is. I mean, Abba Binyamin could have meant exactly what Rashi said, or he could have meant exactly what Tosafos said. It doesn't necessarily mean either of those opinions is the halacha, because I mean, it's Rashi and Tosafos are not dealing with halacha; they're dealing with interpreting passages of the
You're right.
Talmud.
Yes, you're right. But when the Rebbe's comment was more in line with what we actually do and the concerns relating to what we actually do. So the Talmud, particularly in Brachot, it's trying to elucidate what the halachot are of prayer. I mean, before the Rambam and the Tur and the other halachic writings were written, people got their halachic guidance from the page of the Talmud. That's so it is talking about how one should behave.
Right, but we follow the Chachamim. We don't. We follow the majority view. It could be that Abba Binyamin was doing a Midas Chasidus. We have an Agada. We have an Agada here, or a story of the sages. We follow Ma'aser Rav. But
Yeah, but you see, generally, when Tosafot says something, it's generally taken as a halachic statement. So that is why, in the full edition of the Talmud, there are a few pages of the halachic statements of the Tosafot, which is called Piskei HaTosfot, and that goes through the Tosafot in that tractate and selects from them what are the halachic statements. So a halachic statement by Tosafot, and very often Tosafot are speaking in very practical terms. So those are taken seriously. Now, it's quite true that you then have generations of further halachic discussion. But at this point, we're looking at the sort of the keys to the halachic discussion.
Okay.
Okay. Right. Okay, so let's go back into our text. And here we are. Right. Now then we have another statement. Va'al, which Abba Binyamin made, and this also connects with halacha in various ways, as we're going to see. Va'al mitati shetehei netuna ben tzafon ledarom. So Abba Binyamin said, "My bed should be placed north to south." Now, the reason for this was in deference to the divine presence, which rests between east and west, because in the temple, the Holy of Holies is to the west and the main entrance is to the east. Therefore, says Rashi, the sages were careful not to have intercourse while facing east to west. So therefore, they didn't want, and Abba Binyamin didn't want, according to Rashi, to have his bed between east to west. Now, there is actually a comment by Tosafot here, and the comment is, I didn't put it on this page. Which Tosafot says, Dafka, specifically, when husband and wife are sleeping together in the bed, it shouldn't be from east to west. So, whereas when they're not sleeping together in the bed, then it's all right. However, the halakha says, when we now look, as Yosef Yitzchok pointed out, at the halachic literature, which comes later, that's the Rambam taking into account the Rashi and Tosfot, although Rambam is more concerned about what the Rif, what Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi wrote, and then there's Rabbi Yosef Karo. They present this as the halakha. The bed should not be east to west, ideally, even if one is not together with one's spouse. Now, Rabbi Shneur Zalman, in his Shulchan Aruch HaRav, he cites the same halacha, but says that if this is difficult to arrange, one shouldn't worry. Why not? Because the Zohar says one should have the bed east to west rather than north to south. So you there have two different opinions. The Talmud says, have the bed north to south. That's the respectable way of doing it. The Zohar says, have the bed east to west. So the Rabbi Shneur Zalman says, initially, if you're designing your bedroom and you can put the bed where you want, okay, so have it east to west. Have it north to south, sorry. But if you can't manage it and you're looking at your arrangement, don't worry about it because there is another opinion. So all this leads to the idea of people being all the time conscious of the presence of the divine. And this idea about east to west, in fact, is brought out in today's or yesterday's chapter of Tanya. We were speaking before about studying a little bit of Tanya every day. So Tanya in chapter 43 speaks about the way in which we can look at the sun, moon, and stars moving from east to west round the earth. Right, so since Copernicus, this is explained that they are more or less standing still and the earth is going round on its axis. But let's look at it the way the sages look at it. They see the earth is standing still and everything is moving round the earth. Now, which way is it moving? Towards the west, east to west. So that is seen as the divine presence is in the west, the same way that in the temple, the Holy of Holies was at the western end of the temple. So the divine presence is in the west. And everything is bowing towards the divine. So the sun, moon, and stars in the sky, which are moving all the time from east to west, and then they go round the earth and they come up again the other side, and then again they're going east to west, they are expressing bowing towards the Shekhinah, to the divine presence. So therefore, this idea about the bed, which way the bed should be, is really a sense of feeling the presence of the divine all the time and feeling this awareness that the divine is, there's a particular direction. Now, it's very striking that in our country, in this part of the world, when we are facing the temple, we're actually facing the opposite direction. We are facing east in order to pray towards the temple, which is a striking thing. The idea of facing the temple is mentioned in the Bible, in Tanakh, in the book of Daniel. And Daniel was in Persia, and he faced west in order to pray towards the temple. So for him, he was praying towards the temple. He was also praying towards the divine presence, as explained by the sages. However, whichever way we see it, The fact that the temple manifests the divine presence in the world, so that's the direction we pray to. We pray towards the temple. So let's just see if any points arising from that.
Just perhaps you could explain why the Zohar, or does the Zohar explain why to the Zohar it's preferable to align the bed east to west?
Yes, Tim, that's an extremely good point, and I regret I didn't chase that up. That is a good point where the Rabbi Shneur Zalman doesn't explain it in his code of law, and I didn't check up anywhere else, or I didn't even look at what the Zohar says to explain why it has this different view. The Zohar, as the traditional understanding, is written by Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, who is writing before the Talmud, and so there you can have a different view. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai says X, and someone else says Y. But I didn't check up any explanation. There might be in one of the modern commentaries on the Zohar some kind of discussion of that. But I didn't check it out. Sorry.
Thank you.
Sorry, I
It's
was a little.
interesting to it was just interesting to me that the origin of this Shimon Bar Yochai, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, because that would because that means that the Talmudic sages had to consider what Shimon Bar Yochai said, and they chose a different path.
Well, they
And it's
didn't necessarily know what he said in the Zohar. The Zohar was kept secret. And so it wasn't for 1,000 years until the teachings of the Zohar were revealed. So it was a small number of sages who knew the mystical teachings of the Zohar or other aspects of mysticism.
thank you.
Tehillah Bina?
Sorry, I was a little bit late. I'm on holiday in Devon and I forgot, but then I remembered. So do you mind just so you're saying that the Talmud says that the bed should go from east to west,
The Talmud says it should go from north to south,
north to south.
and the Zohar says it should go from east to west.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Any other points from anyone else? Okay, let's go on. We now have a very interesting passage about love of one's neighbor. Now, so here we have another statement from this same Abba Binyamin. Tanya, we learn in a brighter. Abba Binyamin Omer, Abba Binyamin says, Shnayim shenichnasu lehitpalel. Two people came to pray in a synagogue. V'kadam echad mehem, and one of them was quicker than the other, lehitpalel, in praying. V'lo himtin et chaveiro, and he did not wait for his friend, v'yatza, and he went out. So you've got two people coming into a synagogue. We're going to see in a moment this is a lonely synagogue in the fields, as we'll see. And so two people come into the synagogue, one prays and finishes, and he goes out. And he leaves the other one there all alone. Tochfin lo tfilato b'fanav. Now, this is a very harsh expression. His prayer, the prayer of the man who prayed quickly and left, is torn up in front of him. Shenema toref nafsho ba'apo. His nefesh, now nafsho usually means his soul, but it can also mean his prayer. His prayer is torn up before him. Halamancha te'azev aretz. Do you think that I'm not present in the world? So here you have this idea that the person is supposed to stay with the other person. Now, Adin Eben Yisrael explains because he left the other person alone and caused him to be distracted during his prayer, because now he's all alone in the fields in the synagogue. And then it goes on, v'lo od, and not only that, Ele shegorem l'shchina shetistalek miyisrael. He causes the divine presence to depart from Israel. Shneemas, it says, vayetaktsu mimekomo. Now, this is actually the end of this verse in Job. He removed the rock from its place. Ve'ein tzur ela hakadosh baruch hu, and the rock means the Holy One, blessed be He. Shneema tzur yelatcha teshi, as it says that the rock of your that gave birth to you, you have weakened. So in other words, there's this serious criticism of the person who goes out, leaving the other person alone. Let's see what Tosafot says about this. Hamid palel v'lo imtinet chavero, one who prays and doesn't wait for the other person, his prayers torn up. Rabbeinu Tam, he's one of the leading Tosafists. He was a grandson of Rashi. Rashi only had daughters, and Rabbeinu Tam is one of his grandsons. But so Rabbeinu Tam explained, "Dezeh haya lehem b'batei knesiyot shelehem." In the time of the sages, this was the issue that they had in their synagogues. Shehayu b'sadeh, they were in the fields. V'lechach, and therefore, b'layla, at the night, yesh lahamtin, you have to wait for someone. V'hari, now this is a person, Rabbi Yitzchok of Dampierre, he was a very great Tosafist. Hayam acher tfilato, he would make his prayer take longer. U'ma'arich, he would take longer over it. Ad sheyetzu kulam, till everyone had finished praying and they'd all left. Ve'im b'toch kach, and if in the middle, hayashum adam ba b'beit ha'kneset, someone would come late to the synagogue. So Rabbeinu Tam had really, sorry, Rabbeinu Yitzchak had already finished praying. Hayam ayen b'sefer, he would pick up a book and he would look at that as if he was studying. Ad shegamru tfilatam, till all the latecomers had finished their prayer. V'na'el hachmir aflanu, and it would be right for us too to be strict in this way. Now that's a very striking statement, that we have to wait for the other person. Now, v'im himtin lo mascharo, now if he does wait for him in the synagogue, what is his reward? So we have a passage with a verse, a rather obscure verse. Amar Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Yossi says in the name of Rabbi Chanina, Zoche brachot halalu. He merits the following blessings. Shenema, lu hikshavta lemitzvotai, if you would have listened to my mitzvot, vayehi, now the way the Rabbi Steinsaltz explains this, mitzvotai means my mitzvah, but sevet means joining together. If you would have listened to the idea of joining together with the other person's there in the synagogue by himself. So you stand there with him. And if you're doing that, vayehi kanaha shlomech, shlomecha, then your peace will be like the river. Vitzitkatcha kegalei hayam, and your righteousness will be like the waves of the sea. Vayehi chachol zarecha, and your seed will be like sand. Vetzetzaech, and those who come from your loins will also be like the sand, and they will never be cut off. So this idea that tsevet means that the key point here is tsevet in the word mitzvah, meaning company, that comes from a commentary on the Talmud, which Rabbi Steinsaltz quotes, Talmidei Rabbeinu Yonah. Now, there then follows a passage which seemingly is a non sequitur, but the Maharsha explains the relationship. Tanya, Abba Binyamin Omer. Now, Abba Binyamin says, "Ilmalei nitna roshut la'ayin lirod, if the eye would be given permission to see, Ein kol be'riyah yecholah la'amod mipnei hamazikin. No one would be able to stand because of all the different demons which are around. Now, what's this got to do with leaving someone alone in a synagogue? So the Maharsha explains, Ke'inyan she'amru, like they said, she'yesh malachei rachamim, there are angels of mercy, hamavin tfilat adam lefanav yitbarech, who bring the prayer of a person before God. Ve'im ein adam zoche lechach, and if God forbid a person doesn't merit that, yesh malachim achzarim, then there are negative angels, umakatagim, which bring a accusation, shetofinet filato, who tear up the prayer, and prevent it from coming before God. So, in other words, prayer is a very delicate matter. And so, therefore, and this is the now another aspect of talking about these demons is the idea that being alone in the synagogue in the middle of the empty fields, that's like a place which is ripe for demons as well. But the Maharsha, who commented on the entire Talmud, both the halachic and the agadic portions, in a most wonderful way, he interpreted the phrase, the Talmudo biyado, anyone who comes to heaven after 120 years and his Talmud is in his hand, he interpreted that as meaning that he'd written about the entire Talmud, and that's precisely what he did, setting a good example. So he wrote that there are angels of mercy, so therefore prayer is a very delicate matter, and so one has to be careful how one approaches it. And so we can see that this entire story, this shows the importance of Ahavat Yisrael in one's prayer. One must care about others. For this reason, the Chabad Siddur includes a concept which Rabbi Isaac Luria speaks about, and the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, the brief code of law, also includes that at the beginning of the daily prayer, one should say, Hareini mekabel alai mitzvat aseh, behold, I accept on myself the positive command, shel va'ahavta lerecha kamocha, love your neighbor as yourself. And so indeed, we should feel that sense of love of one's fellow, and that should permeate one's prayer as well, even given the whole idea of one's prayer being very dedicated to the divine and being very spiritual, but also there should be the concept of love of one's fellow as well. Are there any comments at this point?
Yeah, just regarding what he says about the demons, how does that fit in with the whole concept of mezuzah?
Well, it's very true that mezuzot protect one not only from demons, but from everything negative, all kinds of negative events. That's true. And but nonetheless, you see, the idea is that they're sort of channels of flow of our prayer. And whether it's angels or demons who are carrying our prayer and either carrying it upwards towards the divine or hindering its process, its progress. So, of course, having mezuzot and everything else positive spiritually in our lives is a help. But at the same time, there's a need to be careful.
Okay. Is that based on Talmud Devorah Perek Aleph Middah 2 about if whatever sins you commit kind of create the demons? Is it those demons? Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Right. The Talmud actually at this point it expands on these demons and all kinds of things about their effects. So I only quoted two or three lines, but if you go on Sefaria for that page, which is 6b, Brachot 6b, you'll find a whole lot more
Oh, thank you.
about demons. Right, let's go a step further. Now here we're back to Abba Binyamin. Tanya Abba Binyamin Omer, we learn in a brayta that Rabbi Binyamin says, Ein tefillah shel adam nishma, the person's prayer is only heard, Eilu bebeit haKnesset, particularly in a synagogue. Now, we can't say it's only heard there, but certainly it's better heard there, because it says, Shenema lishmoa el harina veletfila, to hear the singing and the prayer. B'makom rina, in the place of singing, sham tehei tefillah, there is the prayer. Now, I regret that I did not write down here on this text what Rashi said. Rashi says, b'makom rina, in the place of singing, b'beit haKnesset, in the synagogue, where the community sing beautiful praises of God with a finely modulated voices, that's the place where one's prayer is also heard. So, in other words, the atmosphere of the song and prayer is that's something very significant, the idea of prayer in that way in the synagogue, and the whole idea of the singing in the synagogue. So, of course, we do have the way in which the chazan, the prayer, the leader of the prayers, leads with all kinds of ancient traditional tunes, some of them, and then some of them are more recent tunes. But all these tunes, hopefully, are something which helps and help inspire people. Amar Rabin Bar Avada, Amar Rabbi Yitzchok. So Rabin Bar Avada says in the name of Rabbi Yitzchok, Minayin shehakadosh baruch hu matzui bebeit haKnesset. How do you know God is found in the synagogue? Shenem, as it says, Elokim nitzav ba'adat keil. God is in the community, is there in the community of God, which is this community of God, and that's understood as the place where people congregate in order to pray to God, and that is the synagogue. Mitpalelin. And where do we know that when 10 people are praying together, imaim, that the divine presence is together with them, shenema elokim nitzav ba'adat keil, as it says, God is there together, is standing in the community of God, the congregation of God. Now, this word congregation of God is very intriguing. The idea that the congregation of God is 10 people is learnt from the verse about the spies. Ad matay le'edah hara'a hazot? How long must God bear this evil congregation? Now, there were 12 spies in all. Two of them were good, that's Joshua and Caleb. So that leaves 10. They are called the Edah, the congregation. So from there, we learn that an Edah, a congregation, is 10. So there we have in this other verse, God is found in the congregation of the divine. So that means when there's 10 people, when there's a minyan, the divine presence is there. However, it is striking that we learn the number of a minyan from a verse about 10 Jews who are the spies, who are deemed evil. This shows that in each Jew there is hidden good. So you might say the minyan connects together the points of hidden good in each participant in the minyan. Now, I'm actually extrapolating there. Over here, I've written where's the source about the 10 spies and the idea of the that this is the source for a minyan and the striking. Well, that's easy. That's there in the Talmud. That's a very clear thing. But the Rebbe comments on the point that we learn out what is a minyan from the 10 spies who are negative people. Now, very often the Rebbe focuses on situations like that where we find a positive view of someone. In fact, in Chabad teachings, beginning with Rabbi Schneur Zalman, He gives a whole explanation about the 10 spies, what it was they really wanted. They were really very spiritual people, and that's why they didn't want to go into the land of Israel, where they would have to plow and reap and do ordinary activities. They wanted to stay in the desert, where they were together with Moses and the sanctuary, and it was and eating the manna, and it was a very spiritual atmosphere. So there's also the idea in Likutei Sichot, Volume 8, page 3, that when there's a counting, now it's not specifically speaking about 10 men, but the counting of 10 men, but in general, the counting that we find a lot in the Torah, that particularly in the book of Numbers, that's Bamidbar, that the minyan, the counting, connects the hidden good in each participant. So we could say that when there are 10 people in the synagogue, the hidden good in each participant, it might be very hidden sometimes, that hidden good connects together, and there we have the revelation of the divine presence. So then it goes on, and there's just one thing I would like to share with you. Just one second. All right, there's more material here, and maybe we'll take that in a fortnight's time with the help of God. But first of all, let's just see if there are any more comments on what we've studied today or this last passage. Okay, thank you very much for joining me. And with the help of God, we will be together 2 weeks' time on Sunday. The same time. Thank you. All the very best. Good evening.
Thank you. Another amazing one. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Yosef
All the very best.
Thank
Thank
you.
you very much.
Thank you.